Hello, I'm Elena Del Val, and this is the HispanicNPR.com podcast. My guest today is Mario D'Aquila, MBA, who is Chief Operating Officer of Assisted Living Services, Inc. We will discuss navigating care options for seniors. Mario is also co-owner of Assisted Living Services, Inc., or ALS, in Connecticut, Senior Vice President of Subsidiary Assisted Living Technologies, Inc., and managing member of My Guardian Angel PRS LLC. He also serves as chairman of the DSS Medicaid Committee for Home Care Association of America, Connecticut chapter, as well as serves on the board of directors for the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home. Mario is responsible for helping Assisted Living Services, Inc. and all affiliated companies look for new ways to grow and to have a positive impact on each company's long-term future. He has experience with business strategy, mergers and acquisitions, as well as company formation, and is responsible for spearheading growth initiatives. Mario has previous experience working in project management for mid and large construction companies in Connecticut. He earned a Bachelor of Science degree in Construction Management from Central Connecticut State University and holds a Master's degree in Business Administration from Southern Connecticut State University. Mario, welcome.
Thank you for having me today.
Let's start with a quick conflict of interest statement. For purposes of our conversation today, navigating care options for seniors, who do you represent? Are you receiving funding from anybody other than Assisted Living Services, Inc., et cetera?
Nope, I work for Assisted Living Services, Inc., again, co-owner of that company. So that's primarily, that is my job, and that's where I am an employee.
Let's start with a little bit of a background on the topic. When we say seniors in the United States, what kind of numbers are we talking about? Can you share some numbers with us?
Certainly. So one thing that's really interesting is the notion of this silver tsunami, right? This is sort of the nickname of, the past in coming 10 years, where really every day in the U.S., about 10,000 plus people turn 65 each day, actually. And the number of older adults will more than double over the next several decades. And, that's even to top the 88 million people that represent over 20% of the population by 2050. One another interesting piece of info is that centenarians are even growing in America. Those are people aged 100 years and older, and it's projected increase really over 400,000 within the next few decades, making America actually one of the top countries with the most folks that are aged over 100. And right where this year in 2024, we're right behind Japan, but it is a very slim margin.
About how many seniors do we have in the United States today, approximately?
Well, seniors, overall, I have the statistics mostly on centenarians, which, to date, actually, in 2024, there's over 108 people that are aged, 108,000, sorry, I misspoke there. People aged 100 years or older, which really that's a staggering, number, seeing as, folks are aging longer, not just aging into the 80s. I mean, aging into their 90s and 100. I mean, this is really a time, that we'll look back in history and say, geez, people really significantly started aging. The turn of, the 2020s, I really feel that just due to the advances in, the medical field, as well as the advances in just caring for seniors in general and how we look at seniors in our country, that has increased significantly in the past few years.
And how do you define seniors for purposes of our conversation?
So we'll break it into two chunks, okay? Because there are what the definition of seniors are, which are 65 and older, which now that's like the new 40s, right? And then there's folks that are 85 and older. I'm going to use that as our segment that we're going to be really speaking about in today's session.
Why?
The reason being is because when you turn about 85 years old, that is the that's the age where chronic, most folks have chronic disabilities, such as, things like COPD, they have issues with ambulating around the home, is when the highest, amount of folks actually have the potential to get, Alzheimer's, dementia-related, cognitive issues. And that is really the age that our agency as a whole, represents for who we care for.
What did you say? COP?
Oh, yes. COPD.
And what does that stand for?
Yep. So that is a chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
And is that a condition that is overrepresented in this group that we're going to discuss of seniors 85 and older?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those, like I say, chronic disabilities. Again, it's more or less a really severe, I'll say, for folks that want to know really what it is, it's like a severe version of asthma, along with other things such as, high blood pressure. That's a large segment of our population of high blood pressure that needs to be managed as well as a large segment of folks that could be bedbound, right, just due to an injury or just the inability to ambulate throughout the home.
Is this COPD related or aggravated by the pandemic or post-pandemic? I'm not sure what era we're in, but pandemic, post-pandemic.
That's a really, by no means am I qualified to speak on that behalf because I'm not a medical, a clinician by any means, but I could certainly say that when the pandemic was happening, folks with COPD, they were considered high risk, if you will, since it was a, pulmonary disease. And again, where COVID-19 did affect, the lungs, these were folks that we really wanted to ensure that were protected during the pandemic.
These older seniors and these centenarians that are part of that group, they have a different profile in many ways. Tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Sure. So, there's one thing that I want to talk about actually that a little bit when if folks want to really know a lot about centenarians, there's a great Netflix documentary. It's a five-part series called Live to 100, Secrets of the Blue Zones. And really, this documentary goes into certain areas around the world, Sardinia, Italy, and Japan, and different Greece even. And what they were studying was what sort of things are these people doing in these different cultures that is unique, right? What is the secret to aging? And they found a lot of different things that, they might seem obvious, but they're just things that, in America, it would be worth looking at, right? And worth, doing here. One of those things actually, and a lot of folks say, they always recommend this Mediterranean diet, and that is a big piece of it as well, the diet, obviously. And a lot of these cultures that they study, fish and nuts, vegetables, poultry, not too much red meat, that actually kind of is consistent amongst these cultures, right? Where the superagers are in place. But something a little less obvious in these cultures that, I think that, in America we need to pay more attention to is cultures that keep their seniors socialized, right? Where family's close or where they have activities and they have people that they're sort of part of a group of every single day. What they recognize is that these people are aging healthy and longer. And it's really because humans are an interesting species because we want to be together, right? When isolation happens in humans, that's where obviously things like depression and anxiety can happen. But people live longer when they have something to look forward to the next day, something that they're going to see their friend, they're going to a group that they go to every week, right? Or their kids are visiting or grandkids are visiting. And what they found was that these folks that have a lot of interaction, right, group interaction, are typically living longer, right, in the countries that they studied, which really is fascinating. It's something that, here, I think that, in America, we should look at and we should kind of design our programs around socialization and, remove some of the isolation of aging.
It's interesting because, according to the Pew Research Center, centenarians in the US are mostly women. 78% of centenarians in 2024 are women, and 22% are men. Are you seeing this reflected in your work and in your state?
Sort of using contemporaneous, thought and just experience in our industry, we do see that. We do see a, majority of our clients who do age longer are women, for the most part. And it is interesting. And, one can wonder why. Is it possible that there's more social interaction? Women may have more social interaction, in their older age. The men, sometimes men are a little more isolated, right? And that's something that, in America we can look at. And sometimes, men being isolated could be an issue, and that could be why this statistic is, primarily women aging into their hundreds.
At what point are people looking at aging living issues or older aging living issues? So, if you're saying that the 60s are now what the 40s used to be, and that it's older elders starting at 85 that start to need assistance, at what point are people looking at these issues in advance, or are they even looking at them, or is it a crisis that brings things to a head?
oftentimes what we see is that when sort of an acute issue happens, like a fall, or somebody has a a heart attack, or somebody has some type of medical issue that causes a hospitalization, we see that being the catalyst for families deciding that their loved one needs this care. And oftentimes it is sort of a situation where they're thrown into. And very rarely, I should say that folks call us or start inquiring about resources prior to those events. We do get, however, which is really great, some folks that are aging, right? Usually they're couples, right? We a husband and a wife will come in and meet with us, and maybe they're in their late 70s, and they come in, we have a conversation, and they're proactive, right? Hey, they understand that in the next 10 years or so, they may need care. And that's when they come in, we have a conversation, here are all the options, here's some good things that you can know now that if an issue does happen, later on, right? It could be years, it might never happen, but if it is, you'll at least you have those resources, right? So rarely we do get that, right? Husband and wife come in, we have that conversation, but those folks are way ahead of the game, which is great, right? And families and information like this as well is it's great for families to listen to this and to reach out prior to those issues happening. Do a little bit of research so at least you know the options that are available if a hospitalization happens, because it is a whirlwind. I mean, we lived it with our grandfather recently. And we're in the industry and it's still very overwhelming. There's families, different family members, have different expectations and things. So you really want to start to understand this prior to those issues happening.
What percentage of these senior elders require assistance? Or put another way, what percentage of these senior elders are able to live out their lives independently and at home? Do you have any statistics that you can share with us on that?
So I can tell you that at least in our client population, the clients that we see, throughout our care journey, is that about 90% of our clients who we have to assist with have some form of dementia or Alzheimer's, which it's a very sad statistic, but that's generally our client population, right? Our folks that aren't just physically unable to go throughout the day without assistance, but cognitively they need that assistance to go throughout the day. And that's something that I know a lot of drug companies are looking for different cures or at least things that slow down the disease. But our population, who have non-medical home care, typically it's 90%. And that really runs true for any non-medical agency as folks age and need that type of care.
Is that 10% of the total senior population, or is that half of the senior population? Because obviously, the ones that you're providing assistance and services to are the ones that are no longer able to live independently or without assistance. But do you have any numbers to tell us how many other people are living without assistance independently through their senior years?
Sure. Yeah. So, and I'll specifically highlight dementia, right? Because I think that's important in aging, either independently or with some care. Again, this is according to the CDC, about 4% of adults age 65 and older reported ever having received a dementia diagnosis. And that's the segment really that I'm talking about, which might seem like a small subsegment, but I mean it is something that America does need to take seriously, obviously. And another statistic on that is that the percentage of adults differs from men to women, right? So of those diagnosed with a dementia diagnosis, men have a diagnosis of about 3.8%, right, of that grouping, and women have a diagnosis of 4.2%. So not a huge difference, but definitely something notable.
And many of these senior elders are living alone. Do you see any evidence that this plays a role, that seniors who are in couples or in a family group are better able to age in place?
So what we're finding here, which is very interesting, we actually have a program that we support, right? It's called the Adult Family Living Foster Care Program. And this program, again, it's in the state of Connecticut, and it's in a few other states as well. But essentially, this program, administered through Medicaid waivers, allows the senior who's the Medicaid recipient to have a foster caregiver in the home. It might be a daughter, a son, a niece, a nephew, it might be family, and it's usually family, right, that's doing that care for them. What's interesting about that is that segment of our customer base actually lives longer than our other segment of our customer base, which is where we have a caregiver in the home. Obviously, that's not related to them. But what's interesting about that is the only difference there, right? The care being provided by our caregivers is, these folks are trained in providing care. They have a lot of experience in it. And the families who are caring for these folks in the foster care program generally don't have the depth of experience. However, the life expectancy of those clients is longer. And that is interesting, right? I look at that and I say, gee, this is very similar to that Netflix documentary, The Secrets of the Blue Zones, where families that remain in contact and that have close contact with their elderly loved ones, those folks live longer. And it's just a neat an interesting statistic, and that's just our agency, right? So it'd be interesting to see what other agencies who perform this similar type of program have as an experience as well. But I can say it is true for us, and it's just a small segment, but it definitely is interesting.
What options are available for older seniors who feel that they need assistance, either staying in their homes or that they need to live somewhere where they can reach help at the press of a button? Or you tell me, what are the options that are available for older seniors as they plan their future, or if a situation arises, as you were saying, most of the time that's what happens.
Sure. So really, I'll walk you through and the listeners through the various types of options for seniors. There's home care options, there's community-based options as well. There's some technology options, right, that we can go over. And first and foremost, we can highlight something, and this is what we specialize in, which is non-medical home care. Non-medical home care offers the senior really one-on-one support in the home. Caregivers can assist with things like activities of daily living, and I'll kind of highlight those as well. Activities of daily living can include meal preparation, feeding, light house cleaning, laundry, transferring if they need assistance to be transferred throughout the home, toileting, incontinence care, hygiene, transportation. And then two important pieces of this as well are socialization and companionship. Non-medical caregivers typically are available anywhere from 1 hour a day all the way up to 24 hours a day. There's, hourly shift work where a caregiver would come in for a set period during the day. Or some folks actually might need a live-in home care worker, right? Where a person would actually live in with them, live in that home, sleep in that home, and assist that person throughout the day as well. So that is considered non-medical home care. In the state of Connecticut, it's called homemaker companion care. And throughout the U.S., there's varying different things that the non-medical home care worker can and can't do in the home, and it does vary throughout state to state. But typically, it runs the same vein of what that type of home care is. Where it does differ from the next piece, which is called a skilled or home health care. And that is when somebody needs a clinician in the home. They need a registered nurse. They may need occupational therapy, physical therapy in the home. And really, they administer medical services, right? Like injections, wound care, physical therapy, occupational therapy in the home. Gastric tube feedings and things like that, catheter care. Typically, skilled home health care is temporary, right? It's used after somebody's discharged from a hospital or rehab center. And that service typically is covered under Medicare, the Medicare benefit. And again, that's really to get the person back on their feet, right? So that they can go throughout their life and after a rehab stint. So that again differs from non-medical, right? Non-medical is in the home typically for a longer period during the day to assist with all things living, and the home health really is to administer those medical services in the home as opposed to in a hospital or a facility. There are some communal living arrangements as well. Those are very, that's a very popular growth segment in the US. So, starting one with assisted living communities. And assisted living communities, I always, compare these to cruise ships. They're like cruise ships on land, right? Where if you would like to move into one of these places, you essentially, move in. This is your new residence, and it's a they're typically wonderful places, actually. And they provide, a wide array of services like dining. So you have a meal plan. They have, great, meal options for seniors. It includes housekeeping and transportation, as well as what I was alluding to before, which is social activities, right? Socializing with other seniors and staff as well. They do some personal care, and some offer specialty services like memory care for residents with dementia. They typically are regulated by the Department of Public Health. One of the advantages of this arrangement, again, is that communal style living, right? They have a group of folks that they meet with, every day, right? Or not if they choose not to, but they have other folks that are of similar age, right? To converse with and to go to activities together. One sort of step difference from this and the other is there's something called an independent living community. And an independent living community is a little more like a retirement home, retirement community where seniors that don't necessarily require assistance with activities of daily living, right? They just want to live in a community that offers convenience with social opportunities and things, a maintenance-free type of a lifestyle, almost like a condo. And but they do not provide any hands-on whatsoever in those type of communities. You'd have to, if you did age to the part where you needed some assistance, you'd have to hire outside. You'd have to call an agency like ours to assist inside one of those independent living communities. And then there's what's called a continuing care retirement community. And I say this is a one-stop shop facility or community style living that offers the best of both worlds. It has sort of assisted living community qualities with activities and meal plans and things like that. But typically they also have a skilled nursing facility or rehab as well. So if you do have a you know, a medical issue, you need to get hospitalized, you have the option to go to their facility and they'll get you back on your feet. And you can go right back to your place where you live, which is in that community. And again, generally, those are one-time buy-in with a community cost, with a monthly cost as well, as opposed to assisted living where you just pay monthly. So all of your sort of senior care needs are all included with a one-time buy-in with the community. Continuing care retirement community, you know, in the industry we call that a CCRC. And last but not least, long-term and short-term skilled nursing facilities. These are when, you know, individuals have really a chronic illness or you just can't be in, you know, at home, right? They're so medically complex that they need to be in a medical facility, right? A lot of people refer to these as nursing homes. It's a hospital-like environment. And, you know, they do, however, in short-term care facilities, they provide, you know, intensive rehab therapy, right, and physical therapy and occupational therapy and even speech therapy that would prepare the individual to go back home, right? And that would be in the short-term type facility. Whereas a long-term facility, that's where somebody would stay almost permanently. And really, last but not least, is another type of home health care, at least in our state, which is hospice care. And hospice care is, I think in the U.S., it's often misunderstood. I think folks don't necessarily understand it as much as they should. And if I had to tell anybody really what to research today, it would be just hospice care, right? If you have an aging loved one that really has a serious illness and you're, you know, oscillating on what to do, really study hospice, reach out to a hospice organization. And really what hospice does, it aims to provide comfort and peace to help improve the quality of life of the person that's potentially near death. The hospice care is actually a Medicare benefit, and Medicare reimburses for hospice services up to 6 months, which is, you know, oftentimes not utilized for, you know, at all until maybe the last 2 weeks of life. So the nice part about hospice, again, I know a lot about this because my grandfather was just on hospice. You know, prior to passing, but really they provide support not just to the patient, but they, you know, help the family members cope with their loved one's illness as well. And they really provide comfort for that person who's actively dying. And what it is, it's a great benefit. It is generally in the home. However, if the person who needs hospice is in a long-term care facility, the hospice can go there. They could also go to any type of living arrangement that I kind of outlined before. So, and really last but not least, I do have another type of living arrangement that at least I could speak in Connecticut, and that's called a residential care home. So a residential care home is like a small assisted living facility, right? So where an assisted living facility might have 100 to 200 rooms, residential care home might have 4 rooms or 20, you know, all the way up to maybe 25 rooms, a very small version of an assisted living. And some folks like that. They like a more, you know, quaint style of living. But again, it offers some of the same benefits of an assisted living. Really, those are the highlights of outlining senior care options, both in home and community style living.
And in many of these situations, the residents are sharing a room with another resident, or more than one. Is it usually just two people in a room?
So that's typically not so in assisted living community, a CCRC, or an independent living community, unless there's a spouse in there, right? So you're generally in those types of communities, you're renting that room for yourself. In a long-term care facility or skilled nursing facility or nursing home, again, it has all those different names. There are private rooms, there's semi-private rooms where one would share with another patient. In, again, those semi-private rooms.
And hospice care, if I understood what you were saying, is more about the type of care rather than the actual location of the patient, so that somebody could be receiving hospice care in their own home or hospice care in a hospital. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. It's really the type of care. You know, essentially comfort meds and comfort measures to ensure that that person who, you know, is going through the process of dying, of passing away, is very comfortable in that process, where they can administer pain medications and just make people feel, you know, at ease with the process, as opposed to trying curative measures, you know, to get the person better, right? It's really when a physician determines that patient is going to pass, they would recommend hospice.
One famous patient in hospice care that comes to mind, of course, is President Jimmy Carter. Is he in a facility? Is he at home?
That's a great question. So actually, just for the listeners too, Jimmy Carter turned, again, I think he was the 39th president. He turned 100 this week. He is in hospice, right? I think he said he's waiting till he casts his ballot. I'm not sure if he's in a facility or at home, but I do know that he is on comfort measures right now with hospice. Again, one thing I didn't allude to is the fact that sometimes folks that are on hospice, what they call, can graduate hospice. So they might have gotten from their physician a, you know, life expectancy of 6 months or less to live. So they were put on hospice, but they kind of get through that, right? And we have, we've had many folks that actually we even care for here that were on hospice for some time, but got better, right? Graduated hospice, which is always a good, you know, that's always heartwarming, right? You know, they kind of fought through it. They had something more to accomplish in their life, and they got through hospice. So, you know, our 39th president, Jimmy Carter, you know, turned 100 this week on hospice, but I think he's continuing to go strong.
What skill sets are required for the caregivers. I'm not sure if that's the term that applies to all of these circumstances. Maybe you can clarify that. It sounds like in some cases you have skilled staff. Would that be a nurse and staff that are not skilled? Is that sort of more or less anybody off the street that is paid to transport a patient to a doctor's appointment or to prepare meals? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So there's a few different segments. Okay. So in non-medical home care, right? At least in Connecticut, right? They call it homemaker companion care. Typically, the individuals who care for the seniors, at least through some companies here, they like them to have a CNA licensure, or they like them to have a HHA licensure, that's a certified nurse's aide or a home health aide certificate. And really that just further says that they're prepared to care for somebody with some of these chronic disabilities. However, folks that just need assistance with cleaning and things like that, the caregiver doesn't have to have any of these skills, right? They just need to have to know how to essentially be a homemaker in the home, to know how to cook, clean, and things like that. But if they need to be transferred, right, in a what they call patient lift or a Hoyer lift, it's really good that the caregiver have some of those certificates, such as the CNA or the HHA licensure. But if one needs home health care, again, that's a totally different set of skills and licensures. Again, to be a registered nurse, LPN, or to be a physical therapist or an occupational therapist, that really requires additional schooling and additional clinicals to actually get those degrees to be able to provide care in the home health environment.
What kind of guidelines or oversights are in place to protect these patients? There have been a lot of issues regarding elderly patients, and more so than ever, I think, during the pandemic. There were a lot of issues that surfaced that have come to the light, and a lot of complaints about a lack of oversight on the part of the state and the government in general. What can you tell us about the protection and the guidelines that protect these vulnerable seniors?
Sure. So in Connecticut, non-medical home care is overseen by and regulated by the Department of Consumer Protection. So the Department of Consumer Protection essentially ensures that the agency is doing things like background checks for all their caregivers to ensure that they're not putting somebody with a, essentially it's a criminal in the home of a vulnerable senior. That is a requirement, extensive background checks. They're also ensuring that what the agency is saying that they're doing is what they're being held accountable for. So a certain amount of visits that are done in the home to ensure that the caregiver is doing what they're supposed to be doing in the home. They require manager visits and things like that. So the Department of Consumer Protection has the list of their regulations that they have homemaker companion agencies do. But if you're contracted with to be a Medicaid waiver provider in Connecticut, you're also regulated by the Department of Social Services, right? And they have a list of regulations that you have to follow as well. Many of them are in tandem with the Department of Consumer Protection. There's a lot of overlap, but there's also a lot of things that they require that one doesn't. But what's interesting is that last year, or I believe it was last year, there was legislation signed actually that is going to move non-medical home care, right, homemaker companion care, from the jurisdiction of Department of Consumer Protection in the next year or so over to the Department of Public Health. And I think what happened was agencies and consumers were realizing that having the Department of Consumer Protection is not necessarily the right regulator for folks that are more or less providing some auxiliary health service in the home, right? We're not doing home health, but we're definitely supplementing it, right, with care in the home. And what I think that, you know, the legislators saw was that by moving the oversight from Department of Consumer Protection to Department of Public Health, it would allow more synergy with the other healthcare services, such as home health, such as interacting with hospitals and skilled nursing facilities. It would really open up the communication lines and allow non-medical to expand their services in the home. There's some gaps that are present in the home care world. I'll give you a great example. For somebody that is, you know, an insulin diabetic that has to take an insulin injection throughout the day to ensure that their levels are met, a non-medical home care worker cannot assist with that. So if the person needed you know, that to be done, they'd have to call and have a home health agency and a nurse actually come and apply that. But the issue there is that the demand is greater than the supply, that there aren't enough registered nurses in really in the U.S. to do that, right? So it puts consumers in a rough spot. And I'll tell you that the suggestion is to have family do it, you know, and well, that's all well and great, but sometimes there's not family available, right? That person lives alone, they have no family, or the family's in another state. So what we see is a gap in senior care, at least in that. So we think that moving over to the Department of Public Health would allow us to expand our scope of services to help more people.
What about things like dental care and vision? What happens there? Those are things that, if I understand correctly, are not covered by regular Medicare. Where do they fall in this spectrum of care that we've been discussing?
Yeah, so, you know, hearing impairment, dental, and vision, you know, speaking on really the hygiene end of things, our non-medical services, we can assist with, you know, assisting that person with their dental hygiene, right? So ensuring that the mouth care, you know, is proper, that person has a healthy dental hygiene. We can assist with that, again, because it's not healthcare. But for vision and hearing, you know, it's really important that folks get their annual or even biannual checkups for those things, right? Maybe their prescription changed. Maybe they need, you know, a different type of hearing aid. So where we don't necessarily help with that, what we can do, non-medical home care, is transport those folks to make sure that they get to those appointments, right? Those ever important appointments, which are often forgotten. I mean, people live a busy life. Maybe they have some chronic issues that they're handling, and they're thinking, well, my eyesight isn't, you know, as important as, you know, my chronic condition. So sometimes those things are forgotten, but having a caregiver which would assist you with that, you know, ensures that those things happen. Very important for folks that want to age comfortably in the home.
What costs? I know this is a lot of range of care that we've discussed, but can you give us an idea of the types of costs that are involved And I know some things are covered by Medicare and some are covered by Medicaid, some are out of pocket. Help us get a picture, maybe a basic picture.
Sure, let's navigate through that. So non-medical home care generally can be paid for and funded in a wide variety of sources. Number one is out-of-pocket, private pay care, right? So if the individual is not on any of the programs that I'll highlight, this is number one, which is out-of-pocket care. So if the individual do qualify for something like Medicaid, they may also qualify to be on a Medicaid waiver. And those are through home and community-based waivers that many states, if not all states, have, right? And what those home and community-based waivers do is they fund the home care in the home. Now, typically, home care is cheaper, let's be honest, than going to a facility, right? Style living. So states typically favor that with folks on Medicaid to age in place, age at home, which is why those waivers are available for folks that do qualify. Now, qualifying, they do need to meet certain asset and income qualifications to qualify for Medicaid. And then furthermore, for the waiver, they need to have certain qualifications due to their disability, as well as their age, right? So those are some things that would help them qualify for those Medicaid waivers. And many don't know that actually veterans get a benefit through the government as well. So there's two types of veterans benefits. There's home care through Veterans Affairs, which will actually assist the veteran with getting some home care in the home, which is a great benefit if you are a veteran, if you served active duty as a veteran and you do need some home care. Go right to the Veterans Affairs website, see how you qualify, and start now, right? It's a benefit that folks really need to understand. As well as there's something called the Veterans Aid and Attendance Pension Program, which also has some certain criteria that you need to be eligible. But that can be used to pay for home care as well. It can be used to pay for an assisted living, a nursing home, for a veteran, or even for their spouse as well. So that's through the Veterans Aid and Attendance Pension Program. Last but not least, there are some grants and things like that, depending on to help get home care, through different grants from financial assistance, assisting with making the home accessible as well, so that person can age in place. So really, those are the main payer sources. I'll tag on that. There's an insurance that some individuals have paid for, which is called long-term care insurance. So if you have a long-term care insurance benefit, typically they pay for home care. They can also pay for some of the other things that I recommended before, like assisted living and things like that. But that's a great benefit. I always advocate, look at your policy. You may have paid into one of these things a while back and forgot about it. So look into it because aging, can get expensive. But if you paid into it already, utilize that benefit. You need to really know that you have it, know about it. And we get a lot of calls from folks saying, geez, does Medicare cover this? So typically for non-medical home care, again, non-medical, Medicare doesn't cover that, right? Medicare covers sort of medical type care, can cover home health, could cover skilled nursing facility, cover any health issues that person might have, but it doesn't cover non-medical home care. So typically, those are the funding sources that we recommend looking into. And if one says, geez, where do I start? How do I know where I stand with all these programs and funding sources, believe it or not, going to an estate planning attorney in your local one, right? Local in your area, just if you look up estate planning attorneys, some call them elder law attorneys, they can really help navigate through the various programs. They have copious knowledge in those things. And, if I were to say, where do you start? Start there. That's your number one resource to knowing what the types of funding sources are out there for you as you age.
Where can our listeners get additional information on this very broad topic that we have discussed? Are there websites or books that you might recommend?
Yes. So first and foremost, our website has a ton of information and tons of different links and things like that that assist you outside of our site with resources. So our website is www.assistedlivingct.com. Another great resource is AARP as well. So, Google AARP, tons of different resources for that, as well as the Alzheimer's Association. So the National Alzheimer's Association has a lot of resources on if you have the loved one, dementia or Alzheimer's as well. And then your local social services. So in Connecticut, it's Department of Social Services. Their website has tons of information on how to qualify for some of these programs as well. Where I looked into, I spoke about the elder law attorneys, NALA, right? So NALA is the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. You can find your local elder law attorney by going to that website to see who they recommend that supports elders and estate planning as well. So it's NALA, NAELA.
What steps can our listeners take to improve their chances of remaining healthy and for their loved ones going forward? Do you have some suggestions?
I do. And I'm going to go full circle with this, right? So visiting your loved ones, calling your loved ones, checking in on them, having those conversations and spending time. What that does is it allows you as maybe a son, daughter, or niece, nephew, whomever, it allows you to recognize some things that, could be out of the ordinary, for your loved one. And furthermore, it supports what I said before, right? Which is that community style of living, right? It mental engagement and just having somebody to communicate with gives a sense of purpose, and it extends that person's ability to live in their home and live longer as well. This one's a little obvious, but is to keep moving. Okay. So, oftentimes, seniors and our clients will, they'll have a fall. And when you fall and you sustain an injury, you don't want to fall again. It's a kind of a traumatic experience. So these folks often, after it happens, they become more sedentary. But when they become more sedentary, they atrophy, and the chances of their fall again greatens because of that. So, I understand there's fear around it, but to keep moving, right, that allows the muscles to keep going, right, and that allows blood flow to keep happening, your lungs to be working, really, really important, especially as you age, to keep moving.
Mario, thank you for joining us from Cheshire, Connecticut.
Thank you very much for having me today.
And to our audience, you have been listening to Mario D'Aquila, MBA, who is Chief Operating Officer of Assisted Living Services, Inc., who discussed navigating care options for seniors. To propose a guest for the show, you can email me directly at editor@hispanicmpr.com. That's editor@hispanicmpr.com.